For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to Pre-Market Prep. I gotta say, I'm a little bit surprised. I thought for sure Netflix was going to drag us down here overnight. And yet here we are. And markets were pretty mixed there for a while. But in the last hour or so? Last couple hours. We're really ripping here. Ripping maybe is a strong word, but we are up across the board in stock market land. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Netflix, of course. But now you've all seen that news. It is a dumpster fire today. A lot of implications from that. We're running through the rest of the earnings slate. We have Procter & Gamble. We have Interactive Brokers, IBM, Tesla is tonight. We'll talk about that. Ryan Dietrich is today's guest from LPL Financial. He's their Senior VP and Chief Market Strategist. It'll be at 8:30. And that's the show. So do us a solid, smash that like. What's up, everyone in the chat? What's up, Shannon, Matt Miller, Miss Whitehorse? Good to see you all. Let's get the show on the road here.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. With your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
All right, for the second day in a row, let's bring on Joel live from his dining room. Can you turn your camera down a little bit so we can see your full face?
See my smiling face.
There we go. All right, kicked out of the basement for the moment, live from the dining room. Dennis is in his usual spot, as am I. Let's talk overall market here quickly, and then we'll get to the story.
We dipped, and we're ripping. We're above yesterday's high, up 17 and a half handles at 44.76.50. Knocking on the door, 4,700. We have crude in the green by $1.63, a little rebound from yesterday at 103.68. We have gold that's in the red by 550, 1953 and a half. Silver in the red by 6 cents at 2532 and a half. Bitcoin sneaky under 40K, back up 680 at 42,200. And Ethereum futures, they're down 46, or excuse me, up 46 at 31,6150. So we got some green on the screen for the second day in a row. Triple D, how you navigating that after hours dip and the morning rip?
I mean, they're in the buy the dip mode after yesterday's action. It's kind of predictable that they would probably come in to buy the dip. I mean, it's very impressive that Netflix can lose 90 points and the market can be green right now. So if you were buying the dip last night, like every 100% of people on Twitter, congratulations, you guys are rocking and rolling. It was an impressive move yesterday for sure. The one thing I like about what we've been seeing, it's some of the names that have been beaten up the most that are starting to really bounce back yesterday. So at least, you know, it's a little bit of a reprieve. Is this the bottom in? I mean, everybody wants to know it's bottom in. I tell you, nobody knows. The hardest market to predict. But right now, momentum has turned here again. So is there some trading opportunities in buying the dip? Absolutely. Is there long-term investing opportunities in buying the dip? Who knows? So as a trader, I am. I'm looking at buying the dip right now because you've got a turn in sentiment at least for a couple of days. But keep in mind, that they can pull the rug out from under you quickly. But I do like the fact that obviously Netflix and All Tech destroyed last night, and the overnight traders have come in and bought all those dips other than in Netflix, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah. We watched the whole market turn on that Netflix report, and I thought surely this is going to have some follow through this morning. Follow through for Netflix, maybe, but for the overall market, not so much. So
I thought so too, Spencer. And please don't call me Shirley.
Okay. Let's go to Netflix here. If you haven't seen that, I'm sure you have by now. Frankly, tough report. Basically, a disaster for Netflix. Earnings per share above estimates, sales missed. We don't care about really either of those numbers, though. All we care about is their subscriber growth. The bogey was 2.5 million. They had previously said, we think we're going to increase our subscriber base by 2.5 million subscribers in the first quarter. What actually happened is they lost subscribers for the first time since October of 2011. Netflix reported negative subscriber growth. Let's dive into this a little bit. Part of this was due to Russia. Let's be clear about that. They did, like many, many companies in the course of the month of March, exited the Russian market. They canceled their services in Russia. They canceled all their Russian memberships. That did account for 700,000 a loss of 700,000 subscribers. So it's not nothing, but that 700,000 subscriber loss from Russia does not account for the rest of the disaster. It was still going to be bad even with Russia, because even if the war in Ukraine didn't happen and everything in Russia is fine and dandy, they still would have only gained 500,000 subscribers last quarter, which is well below that 2.5 million number that they'd previously guided, right? So they reported a subscriber loss, and then going forward, they guided that for the year, for the current quarter, they will lose another 2 million subscribers. It's not just confined to one.
That's
quarter.
Bleeding, man. They are bleeding.
They will lose subscribers this quarter as well. Is what the company said. And they gave a lot of reasons why. Mainly speaking, they blamed macro factors like the war in Ukraine. They blamed account sharing, and which we know that people do. And they blamed competition. Hulu, HBO, Amazon, Apple, right? Coming for them. Disney, we know this.
Yeah.
So there really isn't a lot to like out of this report. If you think back to yesterday's show, we were speculating, is there ever going to be a day when Netflix, you know, brings advertising on the platform? That seems like it's going to happen now based on the comments from the call yesterday. Or not so much a call, more of like a pre-recorded show there, whatever. But with Reed Hastings, he said that it makes a lot of sense to offer a cheaper option with ads. It's pretty clear. This is a quote. It's pretty clear it's working for Hulu. Disney's doing it. HBO did it. I don't think we have a lot of doubt that it works. So they have, for the moment, reached a subscriber ceiling. And one of the ways to keep growing is to offer a cheaper tier with ads. So That's good, I guess. But
cut down the password sharing, which everyone does. They estimated there might be 100 million people. I think just in America, they were saying that are password sharing. So literally, like half their subscribers aren't paying. Are people watching and aren't paying?
Yeah.
So something to think about. I believe, and I don't know. Maybe somebody else in the chat can talk about this, but I believe there's only two shareholders left in this stock, Bill Ackman and me.
And you.
Because I've read on Twitter, everybody sold yesterday, all the analysts, you know, everybody. So I'm pretty sure the only people taking heat on this trade is me and Bill Ackman. So we're the only ones that should be crying about this today. But actually, technically, if I want to be really disingenuous, I don't own Netflix either. It's my wife's RSP. So I could be really disingenuous and say, I don't own any Netflix, even though it's in my wife's RSP. So, but I'm not going to be that. I'm going to say I do own it, even though it's my wife's RSP. But, you know, this is the way Twitter is. They'll tell you about their winners. Everybody will tell you about the winners. But absolutely nobody owns Netflix, and they all knew to sell ahead of the report. So congratulations. You guys are all geniuses, guys and girls, all geniuses. I wasn't. I did not sell the stock out of my wife's RSP yesterday. I told you I had a small position going in. It was a half-size position. And now it's a quarter-size position because it just got cut in half almost again. So Bill and me, the only bag holders here, and my wife apparently, the only bag holders here on Netflix.
Monthly levels is the only thing you can rely on here. And we are currently trading just off the lows of the pre-market session. So we have some nice confluence there. The pre-market low is 52.55. And then if you go to your monthlies, you have a monthly low. This is going way back to 2019. You had a monthly low at 252.28. And the next month's low was 257.01. So it's in a zone there. It stopped going down as fast. I think that's like the biggest, you know, the most bullish statement I can make about it. It's just trickling down. So obviously the pre-market low, 52, along with 52.28. This might be a whoops trade candidate where it go, you know, bust through all the pre-market lows. They clear out the stops at 250. They take it down to 248.77 or something, and then come back up through that open, you know, so that way you're just, you know, you're not getting down. At least you would have a reference point to stop yourself out at. If it goes down, makes a low, and then comes back and take out the open. But 52.28, September 2019 low.
It's just remarkable because this stock, if you go on the monthlies, this was a darling for a decade. I mean, first subscriber loss since October of 2011. They've been growing like gangbusters quarter over quarter for 11 years here, right?
I mean, hindsight capital of 2020, it does make sense the competition was coming. We've talked about this. I talked about this is why I wasn't buying Netflix at $600, $700.
Yeah.
You're cut in half to $350, and I was like, well, maybe some of this is priced in. Apparently not. So, mistake by me. All the analysts, let's talk about these guys here, guys and girls, because we got a pile of them downgrading it today. Thank you so much. I appreciate that so much, that help of downgrading the stock here after it's fallen 30%. And the other thing, and I have heard this for a long time, I cannot verify it, but what I've heard, and I don't know if it's true, but we need to do some more research, is that a lot of analyst firms will mark them from the close. Meaning if they come in and downgrade the stock that like last night and the stock's trading at 260, they'll say, well, they downgraded and the stock closed at 348 and they marked them from 348. I don't know if that is true, but I've heard this from some prop traders in the industry as well and from some other traders in the industry that's how a lot of them do it. I don't know if they all do it that way, but if they are doing it that way, that's awful. So I don't know if that is true. We don't have verification that is true, but that was going around on Twitter this morning that, you know, the analysts that downgraded here this morning actually get marked that they downgraded the stock when it was at 348 because it hasn't officially reopened yet for trading. So they've downgraded it when it closed at 348 yesterday. If that is true, that's one of the worst things I've ever heard. I hope that's not true.
Shout out to Laura Martin, and we're going to do our best to get her on the show here because she is she's the upgrade. She's the outlier going against the whole trend today, upgrading Netflix only to neutral. Clearly, this is on the comments about the advertising because she's been pounding the table on that for a few years now, I think. So she's been bearish. She's been right. And now, you can see here, she had an underperform rating on the stock. And now she thinks, all right, the washout has happened. I'm going to neutral. So she thinks maybe the worst is over for Netflix. And maybe she's right. I don't know. She's been right so far. But credit to her for being
right.
At
least she's got some guts, and at least she was bearish coming in. So big time credit to her. Let's get her on the show. Yeah. She was the one analyst that had to sell, and all these other lemmings had to buy. I mean, here you got Pivotal. Let's call some of these people out.
Right.
Pivotal. This buy to sell.
Yeah.
And okay, you had a buy on it. It just falls 27%. Now you tell me to sell it.
Does Laura get the mark from yesterday? Did she get that ridiculous?
Does she go and get like that? Yeah, probably not, Joel. That'll be done today. Just saying, the analysts, like, this is obviously not real money they're playing with. They're making calls, right? So, you know, I don't know if some firms are doing it like that, but you know what we were just
talking about? Do you know who is probably the happiest man on Wall Street?
Michael Pachter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew you were going to go. Yeah, he's also...
I got to listen to Pachter more often. He doesn't go astray. We love Michael Pachter. First analyst to ever come on this show. The guy's given me three takeovers now. He's given me three takeovers in the gaming industry. He told me not to buy Netflix, and I didn't listen to him. I bought it 3 years later, and I bought it the wrong price. I mean, this guy just rocks. Get Michael Pachter back on the show. He is my hero. I'm just going to start my long-term portfolio just listening to whatever Michael Pachter says and following his advice.
He did upgrade the stock like a month ago.
To what? What's his price?
Just destroyed everything I just said.
He's gone to neutral because he was bearish Netflix all the way up, and then he went, I think he thought some of that was priced in.
I thought so.
What's his price target?
That's why I bought it.
I don't know. Look, his price target.
I'm just curious. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to find it right now. Yeah.
But look at these analysts. Okay, so you have, just to start off, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You got 8 downgrades today. 2 of them going from buy to sell, Bank of America and Pivotal. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
I mean, and then, so we got Laura Martin.
Laura Martin.
Laura Martin, you're my hero. Need him. We're going to get you on the show.
He's the hero today.
Actually had a sell on it. I should have listened to you, Laura. My wife's name's Laura, so I guess I got to listen to all Laura's going forward. Underperform, 2 holds. So you have the right to upgrade the stock today. Ring the register at 253, Laura. You're my hero.
All right.
Someone said they're looking for 236 today. Boy, oh boy. I mean, it can do anything. I don't know. I think there's going to be a bounce. I mean, at some point. It
doesn't have to be anything, Joel. That's what they said last night. Bring up the after hours chart. Because every person that just said there's going to be a bounce has not gotten the bounce at all. It continues to leak. Despite the S&P futures rallying 30 handles here, Netflix hasn't went up a sniff. So we were sitting right here near the pre-market lows. It could continue to leak. I'm long the thing. I got a small size position. My wife's RSP.
Smaller
bag now. Bag holding that thing now, I guess. But I'm also long Disney, so I'm getting hit over there. And I have a decent size position in Disney, actually, which is not good news for me.
Look at this. So I was going to go there next. You can go across the streaming board here. Roku, Disney, Paramount. Fubo,
Destruction,
Warner Brothers, Discovery, WBD, all of them down in the after hour session.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Netflix, for that.
Set the bar. We got the bar set low. The one thing Netflix did good for everything right now is it set the bar low. And you can say, I think it sets the bar low for even Tesla. You know, and there's nothing to do with it, but it's like they SHI blanked the bed so bad.
Yeah.
That the next big company that reports, if they don't absolutely blank the bed,
oh my gosh,
I mean, they could rally on it. So I think they actually set up the bar. Tesla's going to report here tonight. I actually believe this. They set the bar not only low for Paramount, Disney, and all them when they report, but they set the bar low for the next big mega cap tech company, and that's Tesla. So
it'd
be interesting to see what the response to Tesla earnings is.
Disney looks horrendous.
Disney's down $7.
Disney looks awful. Yeah. It looks terrible.
It's making new lows on the move. It's not good news.
Looks so bad.
It filled the gap.
This is investing for you. I mean, to a certain extent, I've been poo-pooing investing for a while. I'm getting to a point where I'm like, I should just trade and not invest at all. Because it's like you get up in the stock. It's doing really well. La, la, la. Let's just say you're a long-term investor in Square. La, 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 la. You buy the stock at 50 and you're like a never hold. I hold forever. Warren Buffett, never going to sell. Goes to 50, 60, to 100, to 200, to almost $300. And that's back at 125. And you're like,
Okay. So both things can be true. You can agree that all of this move was stupid and still be bullish to stock long term, which is sort of where I'm at, right? I think that this was dumb.
Wouldn't it have been smart though to sell some stock along the way and then rebuy it here now?
If I had known it was going to come down, sure. You know, I didn't know that. Next time I'll have to ask. But I mean, geez.
But people think as a trader, I'm so risky. And, you know, the only way to play the market is long-term investing. There is this, you know, out there that is said constantly. You cannot time the market. I will tell you, my trading account is fairly consistent. Fairly consistent, meaning I haven't had a down month in my trading account in 20 years. I'm not joking. My day trading account, I've not had a down month in 20 years. In my investing account, it's all over the map. It's up, it's down, it's left, it's right.
You know why?
2020 March, it was way high. Now it's way low.
There's one fundamental reason for that.
What?
You don't go short in your investment account.
And that's pretty much probably it. It's right. I never short a stock in my long-term retirement account.
And neither do I.
And so I'm trading market neutral in my day trading account. What does that mean? It means if I'm long 100,000 worth of stocks or 200,000 worth of stocks, I'm usually short 200,000 worth of SPY or Q or IWM against it. I'm trying to reduce the market risk by hedging. So, and what it does is it smooths your performance. So instead of, you know, you're extracting alpha from maybe you like this setup or in the chart or, you know, there's news, there's an upgrade, there's something you're doing. You're buying a stock for a reason. Well, then I turn around, I short some S&P against it, some SPY against it, to, in case the market tanks tomorrow. So all I'm worried about is that relative performance. I'm trying to extract the true alpha from my strategies. So it is. It's 100% the hedging that smooths my earnings curve in the trading portfolio, where the investing goes like this, da-da-da-da-da, up and down with the overall market. I mean, mine doesn't go as much because, one, I have a lot of cash. But two, the main reason is that I'm lower beta stocks like you, Joel. I mean, we're in higher dividend stuff, more conservative stuff, heavy position in Merck, Pfizer, boring stocks that aren't moving around 50, 60%, besides the small piece of Netflix, which is getting murdered. But I mean, it does. It smooths your overall curve, the hedging portion of it. And people don't do that.
All right.
I mean, in Robinhood, they don't even allow you to short, Joel. So you can't, it's not even an option to hedge.
Yeah.
Which is asinine. It's
puts. I mean, they let you puts, but those we know.
It's insane they don't give you that ability to hedge yourself. That's nuts to me. Like, okay, you can buy puts. Buying puts isn't a hedge because you're paying that premium all the time. So you're always going to be having an expense.
Some of the time.
So it's different. So, I mean, I'm not saying every trader's got to trade market neutral, but I'll tell you at Bright Trading, almost all the traders are trading market neutral. That's what a hedge fund is. Like, people don't understand what a hedge fund is. Hedge fund in itself is hedging. So, you know, yeah, there's long only, there's different types, but a real true hedge fund is trying to minimize the market risk by neutralizing it by shorting other, you know, indices or stocks against their long book. That's what it is.
So Fang, as we know it, is dead. The question now is, do they come for the rest of the mega cap technique? Well, actually, they've already came for Facebook. So Facebook, you're gone. Netflix, you're gone. We've got Apple. We got Amazon. We got Microsoft. We got Alphabet. Tesla's tonight. Mega cap tech in focus. The bar lower for them. Yes, I think we're in agreement on that. But now is
different
is,
business. I mean, I
yes, it's true. Yeah, it's yeah, true. Yeah. Different business. But is this just a sign of things to come that, you know, we're heading, you know, the odds of a, I'm going to say it, recession have gone up in the last month and a half, right? With the war in Ukraine and all the inflation and all that jazz. Is this just a sign of things to come for the rest of megacap? Maybe. You can't write that off now. You really can't. So, I don't know.
I think another thing, and we could probably move on from Netflix after this, it's the reopening, you know? I think people were, you know, jammed at home, and you know, now they're getting out and they're doing things and cutting the cord. That's it. I mean, a lot of different factors there, but we'll see.
I think that's a big part of it, Joel. There was pull forward. You know, you can say as much, and I think you're absolutely correct. You know, we've talked about the Zooms, the teledocs, the pull forward that a lot of these businesses had, obviously. And Netflix had the same thing. There's no doubt they had a lot of business pulled forward. So people who were never going to subscribe to Netflix sat at their homes like, what am I going to do? And they subscribed to Netflix. So you pulled a lot of that business forward. So it's actually not surprising with competition increasing that this has happened. A shame on me for not, you know, realizing it and not dumping the stock out of my wife's RSP, which I should have did. At one point in time, I was up 100 points on that. Now I'm down 100 points on it. So, I mean, it's, you know, but you try to separate it. You try to say, oh, you don't want to start trading your long-term account. You got a thesis and you believe in Reed Hastings and Bill Ackman jumps in your position. You're feeling pretty good. I mean, it's hindsight capital's 20/20 always. The bottom line is when you own 50 or 60 stocks, and the majority of people don't do this, but I've, you know, built some wealth over my life and I own a lot of stocks. I used to own 100. I'm probably down to about 40 or 50 now. But the bottom line is when you own, let's say, 100 different stocks, there's always one dumping on you. You know, you're never going to get 100 for 100 every single day. It's all about diversification. And in the long run, if I look and I looked at my account today and the S&P is trading up, you know, 0.3%, the odds are that my account could actually be green despite having a Netflix destruction because you're diversified and you're in a whole bunch of other stuff. If 0.3%, and literally, I don't think it's even 1%. I think it's like a fraction of a percent of my account. Not saying that's a good thing. It's still a bad thing that I own it. But diversification is key in long-term, you know, investing, I think, too. So where I'm just trying to basically mimic, you know, the S&P performance. On my long-term account, I'm not trying to really outperform. You're trying to have some fun, but you're really just trying to keep up with the market. In trading, that's where I'm trying to outperform. That's where I'm trying to, you know, extract the alpha. That's where I'm trying to get that edge. There's a big difference between trading and investing.
The last thing, and then we can move on to the other stuff here, but I'll give Netflix credit because a lot of times if you only look at an earnings press release or listen to the call, you don't look at the stock at all, you would have no idea whether the stock is up 20% or down 20% because these CEOs can be very rosy on their calls and they love to, you know, say, oh yeah, we had a great quarter, and you would never know that, like, they badly missed estimates, right, based on just the call itself or their PR itself. Netflix, to their credit, they did not pull punches in their shareholder letter yesterday. They did not, they were brutally honest. They said, yes, this is not good. Here is why we think it's not good. Here's how we think we can fix it. But it's not good. So give them credit for at least acknowledging that, you know, it's not good. I mean, they could have, you know, said, yeah, you know, we have all these great shows. Stranger Things is coming back. All these huge hits could go us. But no, they didn't. So give them, I'll at least give them credit for that, for being honest, because their business is at an inflection point right now. Let's move on.
So let's move on and let's talk the S&Ps, because the S&P has moved up relative to this. And let's talk what is strong today, because when you see Netflix and tech, I mean, Amazon is down too here this morning. Facebook is trading down here this morning. You got big major S&P components that are trading in the red here, Joel, but we are now green by 16 handles. So there's obviously something picking up the slack. So I can go to my trusty quote monitor, which I have 200 stocks up, and just start looking at sectors. Semis are really picking it up here this morning. The chips, NVIDIA, AMD, both having great mornings here. You can look at the airlines are having strong mornings here, despite oil being up here on the day. You're seeing a value trade for sure happen here. I can see a lot of the value stocks that in my portfolio, the lower PE stuff that's lifting this morning as well. So it's a little bit of lift across the board. It's nothing really super strong, but kind of everything except some of those, you know, growthy tech names is trading.
Well, you mentioned value, Dennis. You mentioned value. Yep. What's a value stock? IBM.
Yeah.
Here we go. Yep.
Value stock. And they
want to do IBM?
Yeah. I mean, this is a, haven't been able to see this for a while, but what a good time to be IBM right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the earnings last night, above estimates on the EPS, above estimates on the sales, and they're not growth, they're not Netflix, so okay. That's all it took.
And funny thing here is, this was not even like a blowout numbers. If I'm going to tell you something funny, and this is how crazy the market is. If IBM would have reported first last night, I think it would actually have been down on this. But after Netflix just got destroyed and said everything wrong, IBM came out and slightly beat. And they're like, buy IBM, buy IBM, buy IBM. That's honestly how the market is. It's like they were geniuses to report 5 minutes after Netflix because you were just seeing stuff get absolutely pummeled. And then IBM came out and they didn't miss. And it's like, oh, that's where you want to be. And that's what money managers, they bought that, and the algorithms bought that IBM off the quarter too. Was this a great quarter for IBM? No, but it wasn't a bad quarter. And after the Netflix debacle, it was good enough.
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. It was good enough. Good enough is good enough.
Timing. Timing is everything.
Timing. Time these reports, Joel. Time these right. Let's hold our little, you know, okay report till after the Netflix crap show. Worked well.
Wow, big range on that first bar. I don't know why they took it down off that number, but they did. So we'll throw out the low. We'll look at the high, pre-market after hours high, 134.88. Two things I want to check here. I want to check the level that spiked to on that upgrade day and kind of had a bad day in the market. But that was 130.58. We're trading well above that. But just right now, and I wouldn't put a huge star level on it, but interesting at 133 for me. And the reason is that you had two highs in that area, 133.08. 132.04. So I see a 131.88 right there. It's trading above that. So that's one target on the upside, 133. And after that, it kind of opens up a little bit more. But yeah. And on the downside here, it's tough. I don't think you're going to get a shot. You might. I mean, sometimes they have someone comes in quick off the open, top of yesterday's range, 129.40. But with like a strong market and just like the tone of the market right now, I don't think you're going to get it at the top of yesterday's range.
It all matters this. And I just to make my point, IBM last quarter had $3.35 worth of earnings and on a 314 estimate and then 16.7 billion sales on 16.06. So they beat by more last quarter. The stock opened up that day 30 cents.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just goes to show you, like, here we're opening up $3 on a basically just almost, you know, in line. And they beat pretty strong last quarter, and they go up 30 cents. So, I mean, you can't just take these numbers at face value and say this equals this, this equals this. Obviously, there's guidance, there's other stuff involved. But it's sentiment. And it's like, all of a sudden, Netflix just set the bar low for everything they're reporting that night. And obviously, you know, IBM did okay.
Let's bring our guest on and get his thoughts on all this. Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at LPL Financial, Senior VP there as well. Let's get him on the show now. And Ryan, good morning. I don't even know where to begin. Let's start with this. Broad market higher this morning. How surprising is that to you?
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks. Oh, a little feedback there. Okay, we're good. Glad to be here. Yeah, I'm not overly surprising. I mean, yesterday was the best day we've seen since March 16th, at least on the S&P. But I'll tell you, I just scribbled some notes. I'm going to see if I can read my own writing. You know, everyone's talking about Netflix, right? I can't give individual recommendations. I'm just going to talk broadly here. So we know Netflix, but check this out. J.B. Hunt's CFO said demand is the strongest in 27 years. IBM, like you just talked about, was overall bullish IT spending, and Manpower said requests for skilled workers is at a record high. So, yes, we're going to talk about the market and why it could be continue to be choppy and some of the themes I've talked about before. But I think the truth is the underlying pinnings of this economy, are still pretty solid. We're in the middle of earnings season, like we're all talking about. So far, pretty good. Yeah, Netflix bomb, but overall, things are still pretty solid. I think that's kind of a little bit maybe why we were higher yesterday and then following through today.
Oh, we're oversold. I mean, everybody's had this bearish sentiment, and it cycles. It goes in waves. A sentiment itself goes in waves. As the stocks start to go up, people start feeling a little better. As the stocks are going down, people start feeling a little bit worse. But, I mean, coming, it's hard. So, I mean, this is why we love your stats. When you come and you bring us, you know, we're in a rising interest rate environment now, but you've shown us, you know, before that obviously the market can go up in a rising interest rate environment, as per your stats back from 2018, I believe it was. But thoughts on the overall market here, because we just seem to be going really nowhere. Like, I mean, we feel like we're going to start going up and then we start coming down again. Then we start going up. We've really been in a year of just like kind of just chopping around and going nowhere.
That's true. Tell me you see my screen. Do you see that?
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. Perfect. We good now?
Yep.
Awesome. So I brought a few, like I like to do with you guys, I like to bring a few charts for you. I mean, you know, what did we know coming into this year? It's kind of what you just said there, Dennis. Kind of choppy, right? Last quarter is one of the weakest quarters out of the four-year presidential cycle. This quarter, out of 16 quarters of a presidential cycle, it is what it is the worst quarter on average. Next quarter is not that great either. Midterm years tend to be choppy and frustrating. We're fully aware of all the headlines, the inflation risk. You know, the Fed is hawkish, the global geopolitical concerns, economy's pretty solid. It's not that great. It's slowing down, no question. Look what the IMF just did yesterday, right? Pretty good cut in GDP globally. But we knew coming in, things are pretty choppy. Now, hopefully this works. Next slide there. Here's one thing that kind of worries me. If you want to talk about worries, overall, we're still structurally bullish, yes. But what we just talked about, when do markets bottom in a midterm year? I've showed all the midterm year lows going back to 1950. Intra-year pullbacks about 17%, right? We had about a 15% correction earlier this year into the March lows, but it's not till August 14th is your average bottom during a midterm year. Median is actually September 4th. So could we have hit the lows earlier in March 8th? Yeah, we could have, but I'll just say that maybe there's one more whoosh lower that could be needed to kind of flush things out. And I know you guys share lots of charts like this, but cyclicals are breaking down all over the place. I got different cyclical things on here. This is relative strength versus the S&P. So it doesn't mean we're outright bearish, but we have to be aware of what's going on when you see home builders and broker dealers and what else we got on there, retailers and transports. But what's doing well, like you guys talk about a lot, the more defensive things. We think this is more of a mid-cycle slowdown a la 94, 95, early 95. It's not necessarily the end of the bull market. It's not the end of the economic cycle of growth, but potentially just kind of a defensive stuff's leading. So let's kind of play that and see where it's going. And we'll have fits and starts with things, but that's where we are now. But just two more things, then I'll maybe shut up for a second. You know, people are pretty bearish. So I'm talking about some potential worries, right? Defensive things leading, midterm years to the bottom for the year, later in the year. But everybody's bearish all of a sudden, it feels like, and rightfully so. This is the Global Fund Survey by Bank of America. The smallest, or how do I want to word this, the lowest expectations on future growth since October of 2008. Then that AAII sentiment poll that everybody looks at every Thursday, lowest in over 30 years. I'm sharing that there. But here's where it really matters, if you ask me. Shared this on Twitter. It's pretty popular yesterday. There's, actually, I don't know how many. Oh, 31. There's about 31 other times the bulls were less than 20%. What happens next? Well, it is what it is. You can see that there 12 months later, higher 30 out of 31 times. Full disclosure, a lot of those are, yes, they're clusters, right? A lot of those happen together. Yes, it's a small sample size. Yes, it's kind of the same people voting voting every week. Yes, they're probably the Kathy Wood ARC guys that are hammered versus if someone's in, you know, energy or something, they're not feeling that bad right now. But still, a year later. So my point is maybe some more choppiness and frustration could be the play here. That's not the end of the world, but just kind of be aware that makes sense in a midterm year. So I just talked a lot. Maybe I'll be quiet for a minute.
I mean, the biggest thing that I've got, Ryan, is there's just so many mixed signals, though, right? I mean, we know this stocks have been choppy, but bonds suck, right? Yeah. I mean, so, like, where do you go?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good technical term for our bonds. I mean, this has been literally like one of the – I think I saw the other last night that TLT, you know, long-term treasuries, down like 28%, largest bear market ever for long-term treasuries. I mean, the answer, well, you know, what happened? Stocks are down 5% in the first quarter, and bonds are down 5% in the first quarter, give or take, looking at the Barclays Ag. Well, commodities obviously did well, right? I mean, we've been optimistic commodities. I mean, energy and materials make up about 7% of the S&P 500. That's one apple, right? When you put that in context, it's like, wow, there's been a big bounce in those groups. Relative strength still breaking out. I mean, look at steel names looking good, copper names. Now, I know they pulled back yesterday and maybe a little more today, but, you know, structurally, those still make some sense. So if you say 7% of the S&P 500 is materials energy, we'd say maybe tilt a little bit more there. That's one place to go. But just investors, and I know it's all about time frames. I take probably a bigger time frame look than, you know, maybe a lot of people listening on this show might, but just be aware, choppiness makes sense, and it's not the end of the world. I do want to point out one other positive thing. You know, inflation. Everybody talks about inflation, right? Well, used cars make up 4% of CPI. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it actually is. Used cars were a big part of why inflation was over 6% last year. All right, we've seen a huge drop in used car prices the last 2 months, kind of a canary in the coal mine that, hey, maybe inflation is starting to come down a little bit. The other one I want to point out is look at shipping costs, right? It used to cost like $2,000 to ship a container from Shanghai to New York, all right? Then it went up to like $14,000, $15,000. They're down 30%. If you look at Shanghai to LA, New York, Rotterdam on average, down 30%. This is more, you know, positive stuff. It's not all great, I'm aware, but that's potentially a positive. And then the other thing is, this is getting geeky on you, but there's something called sticky inflation and flexible inflation. The Atlanta Fed does this. All you got to know, look at the chart here. You know, in the 70s, sticky and flexible both were high. What have we seen recently? Flexible, really high. Sticky core inflation hasn't gone up that much, potentially meaning that other inflation could come back down nearly just as quickly as it went up. But what does that all mean? Everyone knows the Fed is hawkish, rightfully so. Churchill said it's better to jar than war. I think there's a lot of talking with the Fed. We think, yeah, we're going to see 50 basis point cuts, hikes in X2. Maybe, though, if inflation comes back, that's the kindling to get this thing going again later in the year when we don't have all the hikes that everyone is expecting right now, because inflation is going to finally start to roll over.
Yeah, I think I agree with your sentiment on that. Powell stuck with the transitory, you know, for too long, right? And he was proven wrong. So he said, you know what? I'm going to pivot and I'm going to go the other way and I'm going to become, you know, more hawkish. And the market reacted to that. Ryan, I mean, what about the financial sector? You know, JP Morgan, I mean, these stocks are down. They're down for the year. They're down more than the S&P 500 in a supposedly rising interest rate environment here. Are these things just, are they underpriced here? And I'll just go, I know you like to stay broad here, but talk a little bit about the financials here in this environment.
Yeah. Given I work for one, I better be a little optimistic, right? But nonetheless, you know, you think about it, it's a mixed bag. Kind of like we talked about the big banks, right? The super money centers, those have struggled, relative strength, making new 52-week lows, a lot of cases. Yet insurance has been literally one of the strongest subsectors that are out there. And people talk about, well, yields are higher, it should be beneficial for financials. But clearly what we've learned or relearned, maybe we should have known this, is the shape of the yield curve is definitely a big part of it, with that flattening yield curve that we saw, that kind of pressures at the headwind, if you will, for a lot of these financials. And you talk about earnings season, right? We're in the middle of earnings season. 11 S&P 500 sectors, right? The top two earnings supposed to be energy and materials, because all those things were a lot cheaper a year ago. Financials are the big laggard. I think down 26% year over year is what we're expected with financial earnings. So what I'm getting at is a lot of negativity right here, Joel, when you look at it with financials. Maybe they can have some potentially better news, that yield curve starting to steepen a little bit again, right? Maybe that's another tailwind. We're more neutral on financials in general, though, to be honest. We like some other groups more, but there's still some potential opportunity there on this pullback.
Awesome. Ryan Dietrich, I know we got to let you go. Ryan Dietrich, LPL Financial, Chief Market Strategist. Always a pleasure, man. Appreciate your research and your charts and your perspective. And
Joe Burrow and I back there say thanks, guys. We appreciate it.
All right. Go Blue.
There we go.
Okay. He had to get it in there. I wanted to go back to the comment about it's all about timing from before, because it occurred to me just quickly to bring up Interactive Brokers, right? Because look at IBKR this morning. They had earnings last night, right? Or maybe it was this morning. I don't know anymore. Charles Schwab had earnings a couple of days ago. Yeah. Charles Schwab reported trading activity went down year over year because last year's first quarter was nuts, okay? Market sees that. They punished Charles Schwab down 9%. Interactive Brokers comes out, what, 2 days later, says the same exact thing, right, as Charles Schwab. It is down 1% this morning. 1%.
Yeah. It's not even really down much at all here. It hasn't even made a trade this morning. It was down 1% last night.
Very light volume, yeah.
Yeah.
We've said this again and again, and it's how dumb the market is, but this is the way it works. I mean, it's all about expectations going into a report. And when Charles Schwab comes out and gets hammered to the tune of 10% on their report, they just set the bar low for Robinhood. They just set the bar low for Interactive Brokers.
Yeah.
And what you see is the turnaround. And I mean, look at where Schwab, you know, was 3 days ago. Look, we're a Hood and IBKR are, and they haven't went down at all. So, I mean, now if they say anything, okay, and IBKR comes out in line, little slight miss, but basically the same thing. It's slightly down, but I don't think it gets tuned up for 10% here. Maybe it's going to be down a buck or something, it looks like, in the morning. But I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if it doesn't get hit hard at all. So, I mean, should it get hit hard? Really, it should. Because, you know, was it as bad as Schwab? Maybe not, but they're saying the same stuff. But that's the way the market is. Schwab set the bar low for IBKR and Hood.
Yeah.
If you're looking at Interactive Brokers here, we are trading down 99 cents, as Dennis mentioned. No trades have taken place this morning. There's last 2 days, maybe take a look at the lower 63 handle. Yesterday's low, 63.51. Your 2 day, 63.15. So it's kind of been a little bit of a trading rage, a little bit of a strong day yesterday with the market. But looking at that as support and potential support, and people probably wouldn't mind seeing the market 65.47. I see a couple other closes in that area. And I just wanted to look at this like on a relative, because they were off its all-time high, right? That hit 80 at the end of last year. And I just wanted to see where Schwab was. Yeah, that pulled back too. I mean, that was in 10 bucks of the all-time high. But there's a look at Interactive Brokers. Never got in the merger mania like Morgan Stanley did and Schwab. So. No. I like that.
All right. I want to go to I'm going to switch gears for a second and just go to PG, Procter & Gamble this morning. They had earnings. Beat on the earnings, raise on the guidance. They raised their sales growth guidance for the year from 3-4% to a 4-5% raise or increase. And I mentioned the earnings also – earnings and sales above estimates. Very simply put, a company that is able to pass along – cost increases to the end consumer.
Yeah, impressive that they've been able to do that. And I was on the record thinking it would sell off. I was at 165 looking at those highs. It did sell off, went down to 143, but it's come all the way back here again.
Yeah.
And you just cannot break this money manager hunger for defensive stocks in 2022. It's like they get beat up and they just come in and they just can't stop buying these stocks. I mean, Johnson & Johnson was maybe the best example from yesterday. They tune it up, knock it down $6 on the earnings report, and they couldn't even be down there for a day. And then it turns around and starts making new all-time highs that exact same day. I mean, there's just a hunger for money managers to buy these stocks until the overall market turns. And there is an inverse correlation with Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, and utilities and all these stocks with the overall growth tech sentiment, inverse correlation right now with the NASDAQ. Until the NASDAQ starts getting a footing, these stocks probably continue to stay strong because money managers want to be invested and they don't want to be in growth. That might change, and maybe it is changing right now, but right now these stocks are just innocent until proven guilty.
I think you missed your chance to sell this in near 163. I even think you missed your chance to sell this near 162. We faded a buck and a half off that high, going up to one, just over 163. Coming back on the downside here, I think it's support. I mean, let's see, you could get it at the top of yesterday's range, 160.03, 159.41 to close. So it was struggling at that 160, 160 and a quarter area, old resistance, new support, but thinking I have a hard time getting back up to 163.
Just looking ahead on the calendar to tonight, big one's going to be Tesla. We are going to be streaming that call on our YouTube channel later today. But you got Tesla, you got United Airlines, CSX, Lam Research. These are your headliners for tonight's earnings slate. Any of them jump out to
Tesla. Let's talk Tesla. I mean, the resilience in this stock has been incredible as well. But don't kid yourself. Bring up the SPY and bring up the chart of Tesla. And I talk about this all the time. It's such a big component in the S&P that the typical trading in Tesla is simply S&P arbitrage. And look at the charts. I mean, they have just now mimicked each other. Tesla is an large S&P component. And I buy Tesla and short Tesla, I feel like, multiple times every week, because it's part of the S&P. And if I'm doing my hedging, I need to be in there. I need to have Tesla or be long Tesla or short Tesla. So all the arbs just make this stock move with Tesla and SPY. Can you do that, Joel? You can't bring two charts up with each other?
Spencer's.
Well, I mean, I've got them both up right now. It's a little bit hard because the beta.
Well, you got to look at it since, yeah, you're looking at it.
The beta on Tesla is so much crazier, though. So
But if you just look at the action from the last even 3 months, yeah, the beta is going to throw you out on that. But I mean, you can see the charts that they're very similar now.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in the last 3 months. I mean, I look at just like the last month and I see, oh, the sell-off in Tesla. I see the low on the same day that the SPY made the low. Like the two charts, if I could show my screen here, in the last 6 weeks are virtually identical. Obviously, the percentages are going to be different because you're right. Tesla's beta is a little bit higher. But for the most part, it's just moving with the S&P on a higher beta.
Yep. You're right. Yeah, I mean, if you look closely at the purple one, you can
see. Yeah, again, because this is a percentage chart, can you just show the actual price action on a percentage basis?
I'm sure I could, but I would have to do it a little bit. And okay,
because I'm actually looking at price action and price action, and these two charts look identical in the last 6 weeks.
I am admittedly not.
And I mean, Google and Microsoft and Apple, and it's all the same part of the same story. But on individual earnings reports, there will be differences, obviously. So it's going to matter what Tesla says. I do believe Netflix has set the bar low for Tesla here, just like they set it low for IBM, even though the companies have absolutely nothing to do with each other. It's big. It's the next big mega cap to report. So Netflix has been destroyed. If Tesla says anything okay, I think the stock rallies on it.
Yeah.
I'm looking at, just to keep the rally going, the rally intact, 975. Just, keep an eye on that area. I know we're $40 away, but I'd see four lows in the last eight sessions right at that area. That's your major support. As long as that level holds, we're just going to go merrily higher. And on the upside, we're off the high of the move. This is kind of choppy. You didn't get to an all-time high. Just use your daily highs, 10.34, 94, and then it opens up closer to 10.50. So that's what you're looking at in shares of Tesla.
Tesla is similar to Netflix in that there is, for simplicity's sake, there is one number that you can hang your hat on, right? Or I guess one question, right? And the question is, how bad has the lockdowns in China affected their production and delivery capacity?
Right.
That's the question, right? We already know what their deliveries are because Tesla gives delivery numbers every month. So it's not a question of that, but it's a question of are there facilities like drastically disrupted and it throws off the entire estimates for the year, or is it a minor inconvenience for the company? Whatever they say tonight whatever they say about that should determine the direction of the stock. It's a pretty straightforward issue. It's all about deliveries and production for them, and specifically China right now. So that's going to be your big one tonight. Let's do some ticker time. I am trying to remember. There's a few tickers.
Before we do that, Spencer, I mean, we just got to talk about, it is 420.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even, I remember, but I
remember. And it's just you mentioned this yesterday. MSOS is an all-time low.
Brutal.
All-time low.
Yep.
What is MSOS?
That's the U.S. cannabis ETF.
That's that widely traded. I've never even I don't think that's traded that much, is it? I guess it is a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
So much I love pot stocks.
Yeah.
It hit an all-time low yesterday. So it's come off those lows here. That's impressive. I mean, this sector has been really a dumpster fire. Yeah. I mean, It's been really tough. The valuations were all nuts. We talked about this. I talked about this for years, and they kept getting more nuts. So I was proven wrong for a long time, but in the long run, I ended up look like being right, not to own any of these things. Tilray, $5 all-time high, $300. CGC, $5 all-time high, $60. I mean, it was just the valuations on all these things. Just the hype was too much. Valuations got nuts. And they've come in, and they've come back to reality. Is there value here at some point in time? Yeah, these are real businesses, and a lot of these businesses aren't going away. But you just got to look at market cap still and say, okay, can it justify it? Because it's really a crop. That's what it is. You know. And I was always saying, like with Afria, is a greenhouse full of pot plants. Is it worth $7 billion when the greenhouse next door is worth, you know, $10 million that's full of cucumbers? So you're comparing, oh, they got pot plants, though, so they're worth $7 billion. But the greenhouse next door, it's the same size and everything's worth $10 million. I mean, there was a huge disconnect there. That connection has come back. I don't think it's come back even enough yet, though. So there's going to be, you know, it's going to be stocks that, you know, come up and go down. It's not going to go straight down. But overall, the path of least resistance continues to be lower on the pot stocks. I never like making stocks make new lows. With that being said, you got good support at $5 on CGC. You got good support at $5 on Tilray. So I guess if you want to take a shot, you know where your stop out is.
You differed there. You usually say a greenhouse full of tomatoes. You went with the
cucumbers. Yeah, I went with cucumbers this time. I should go tomatoes. But yeah, so I mean, it's really what it is. I mean, in the long run, and you can buy anything on hype and story and you can make money, but in the long run, valuation does matter. If you're planning on buying a stock and holding it for 10 years, nothing matters except valuation. And is it reasonable? So meaning that it can grow into that valuation. Obviously, you know, Tesla back in the day grew in to a certain extent to its valuation, still hasn't, you know, maybe caught up with it all. But I mean, there's lots of stocks that, you know, have growth at a reasonable price. And I've always tried to invest that way. Sometimes, you know, it works, sometimes it doesn't. But overall, I feel like you do better with, you know, buying stocks at a reasonable growth rate, you know, good growth, reasonable price, as opposed to just buying growth at any cost.
I just threw a list of the four pot stocks that I own up on the screen going back 2 years. I will maintain that if you are looking to take a small flyer on growth as part of a, you know, broader diversified strategy, there's worse you could do than pot. I still maintain that. I'm not selling any of my
these pot are the pot. U.S. ones.
These are the U.S. ones, yes.
Which is a different story. So when you go to CGC and Kronos and all those were all Canadian.
Yeah, different
story. And this was the competition coming for them, really. I mean, because and obviously it was competition came from independents and, you know, private companies in Canada as well. But it's a little bit of a different story. Same ugly story that they all topped out in January or February 2021. But I mean, there's still some return there. If you go back to, you know, do the same chart there for the Canadian ones, I don't think they're up in the last 2 years.
No, they're not.
Completely different story.
Different story entirely. We got a super chat about this. It's been a minute since we talked about any SPAC at all, but there is speculation on IPOF that's Chamath's or one of his SPACs, and speculation that could be taking Starlink public, which is Elon's satellite everything company. It has been going up on increasing volume in the past couple of days, but I don't know if speculating on SPAC takeovers is the right thing right now.
I mean, Chris Catchy was doing some research, and I love the Catchy research. I mean, there is a play here that you could say, okay, well, the bottom on these things is like $9.90, $10 because you get to $10 back. Yeah. So you got 55-cent risk to look at the potential upside of that, but you do have that 5-7% risk. That's pretty much where you're at. I mean, they could buy something you don't like, and then you can always get your $10 back, which is nice. That's the nice thing about SPACs. But, you know, there's a bazillion of these SPACs out there that are still looking for a deal. So it's kind of like finding the needle in a haystack to say, okay, this one's going to be the one. And, you know, is Musk going to go SPAC route, or is he going to, you know, go the other route? I'd love to own Starlink. So you could speculate. You could come in here. You got 5-6% risk, though, which isn't crazy.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, so I don't mind the Catchy call. I love Chris Catchy. So yeah.
All right.
You know that.
All right.
Is he in the chat right now?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Niche's partner in crime.
All right. Well, let's go here. Man, I wish I could remember. I didn't write down. There was a few tickers at the top of the show that we were asked about. I don't remember what they were, unfortunately. I'm sorry. I didn't write them down. Mike, noting we didn't talk about Twitter today or yesterday on this show.
Oh, my gosh.
We didn't talk about Twitter for 2 days.
points.
Well, we talked about Twitter at the top a little bit.
What a level, though, Joel.
I know.
I called the 45 level before it was a level.
I know. You did. You did. And it. I mean,
can you believe this level?
I know.
Look at the lows and what we're talking about. 44-71 in the 11th, 44-44 on the 12th, 44-55 on the 13th, 44-72 on the 14th, 44-36. I mean, obviously, they're just pricing in a binary event. The risk arbs are like, we're going to sit here, this thing at 45, 46 until we get further clarity on whether there's going to be a deal or no deal. What was that show? Wasn't it called Deal or No Deal?
Deal or No Deal. Howie Mandel. Great.
Yeah, that's Howie Mandel. That's this stock right now. It's Deal or No Deal. And if it's no deal, it's $35. If it's deal, it could be 55 or more. So, but I mean, that's where you're at. And they're just pricing it out right in the middle. Stuck in
technicals
the middle.
Don't work, man. Technicals don't work.
It's waiting for what does. Right in the middle. The risk guards are boom right here. Yeah. It's going to go like this on no deal, or it's going to go like this on deal. And it's just sitting here waiting for more information. So it's a wait and see game. If you're
you know what they're doing too? They're flipping it out at 52. Not 52, but for a while, because you've had the move basically, a 10 point move, right? 49, half of that. Look at the highs in the last three sessions right under there. 48.5, 48.73, 48.5. So it's getting tight. What are they going to, when's this thing going to be over? Is this just going to go on for forever? I mean, Bravo, no one's come out with a bid. No one, besides Elon at the 54.20. The street doesn't believe that the company is going to take it. Is it worth that? I don't know.
How bad Musk wants it. If he wants it bad enough, he can take it. But to the point of David Faber yesterday, who honestly on CNBC is just excellent. I mean, you think about all the nonsense commentary you get off CNBC, but when Faber talks and he's got information, he's connected. And he was saying that, for the most part, there isn't this, white knight coming that's going to trump, Musk's bid here. It's like Musk or bust, really. And I don't even know how much help he's going to get with it. So it depends all on how much Musk wants it. But to your point, Joel, there's not a lot of people come paying $60, $70 for Twitter.
No.
It doesn't make sense. Musk wants it. He doesn't even want it because of valuation. He just wants it because he wants it. So that's the bonus for Twitter shareholders. But if there is, if Musk says, okay, that's it, I give up, and packs it in, the stock's under $35. So you have a 10, 12 point risk here if there's no deal. And that's why it goes right back to deal or no deal. Musk really wants it, and he pays $55 or $60 for it, you're going to make some money. So it's in coin flip territory. At 52, 53, it was a screaming sell because all the upside was priced in. But at 45, you're just in coin flip territory.
All right. It is 9 o'clock. We are ending the show and going live to day one of the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. Mike Tyson and Ric Flair.
Oh, my gosh. Mike Tyson there.
Later today.
And Ric Flair.
And Ric Flair, check the agenda.
Ric Flair, too. Why am I not there? You have Ric Flair there, and you have Mike Tyson there.
I'm also not.
These are like two. Oh, that Ric Flair. Woo!
Woo! That's it.
Woo!
Smash that like button, please, and thank you. Thanks to our guests.
You're biting, wooing. You got everything there, man.
Everything. This conference is freaking massive. We took up like the entire Fountain Blue Hotel. Down in Miami Beach, so it looks like it's a ton of fun. Yesterday went great. Today should be even better. So I'm going to send you guys over there now. We'll be back at 3:30 for At the Close. Until then, have a great rest of your day. Stay green out there, everyone.
Woo!
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.